Now, this is sort of, this might sound like a strange conversation for some people out there who are like, wait a minute, that's, isn't that, like, of course you celebrate the individualism mm-hmm. of your children. But what Brett and I both are struggle with is that we have a higher value, which is we want our families to think about themselves as a team. And so it's important to figure out where's that balance. And our mm-hmm. culture does so much work at elevating individualism that sometimes it feels like anything we do to celebrate individualism is actually continuing to allow that pendulum to be so extreme.
Hey guys, welcome to the Dads Building Teams podcast, where we chat about exactly that, dads building their family teams. Every week, me and my friend and mentor, Jeremy Pryor, alternate interviewing another father friend of ours about his particular journey as a father, pursuing the call to build a multi-generational team on mission. As always, let us know what you thought of today's episode on social media at Family Teams. And without further ado, enjoy today's episode.
All right. Well, welcome to the Family Teams Fatherhood Podcast, where we talk to dads on the journey from parenting just a group of separate individuals to building a multi-generational team on mission. Here in the studio, we have our producer, my daughter, Kelsey. And today our guest is Brent Krutoff. Brent and I think, met at the Father's Midrash.
Yes, that was the first time we met Father's Midrash.
Yeah. How many years ago, do you remember?
I started going 5 years ago.
Yeah. Okay, awesome. So we've been hanging out for a while, having this conversation around dads, and I thought this would be an awesome time to hang out with Brent, talk about this journey he's been on. Why don't you tell us just a little bit about your family, your business, kind of what you guys are up to?
Sure. All right, so I have two kids. I have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, and my wife is 39 weeks pregnant with our first girl. She's going to we're going to be induced on Thursday, so we'll have this time next week we'll have another baby. And we have three businesses that we run between the two of us. And I came out of job as a CPA working in public accounting about 5 years ago when we started the whole family discussion. And the story goes back a ways when we were, after college. I got married pretty soon after college, and I'd realized, I'd come to the point where most of my decisions at that point had been made around finding a girlfriend and getting a wife. And like, that's mm-hmm. how I made most of my decisions in life. And then I came to the point, like, now that I'm married, what should I strive for in life? And I came to the decision kind of subconsciously, but kind of consciously, like, I'm going to try to do as good as I can in my career and make the most money as possible and climb the corporate ladder. And so I did that for several years as a CPA. And then we got an international assignment in the Cayman Islands. So my wife and I went to the Cayman Islands for 2 years. We were auditing hedge funds there. We saw like a lot of extreme wealth in the Cayman Islands, people who achieved what I was trying to achieve. And kind of felt icky when I saw it. God kind of closed my heart towards that and felt like we felt like there was something better to pursue. That was back in 2010 through 2012 is when we were in the Cayman Islands. And that was kind of the start of our journey of leaving behind the kind of the American dream and searching for something deeper. And so at that point, my 2-year work visa was up. We decided to go back to the States, and I knew at that point that I wasn't going to go back. I had 3 job offers on the table, and I felt like God was telling me to start up my own business. So we did that, and then shortly afterwards got plugged into Storyformed Life, and that's kind of where God showed me the why. I knew what I was supposed to be doing. Having a business startup in order to have more flexible and more time with my family. And then through Storyform Life, God really showed me like why we were doing that. And that was really a catalyst and a motivator for doing the family businesses. And so I mentioned we have 3 businesses between my wife and I. I run a fitness company. We sell fitness products through Amazon and an e-commerce site. And my wife sells high chair accessories. And she also runs a wedding album design company. So we have the almost 3 kids and the 3 businesses that we run, and we both work from home, and we have a very integrated life of family and business.
Awesome. Yeah, that's really cool. So I would love to get kind of deeper into the journey.
Yeah.
Like this kind of transition you were describing, you guys were on kind of a more of a typical path, just sort of thinking about, you know, how do we build wealth? How do we have this lifestyle? And you saw kind of the extreme version of the Western dream or the American dream. So you said you went through a Storyform Life. And by the way, for those who are listening, so Storyform Life is about a 10-week kind of training process that we take people through that tells a story of the gospel from creation all the way to recreation. But in the process of that, we often have this conversation around different stories you can live out, and that we already are story formed by another story. And so a lot of people tend to put Jesus or their faith on top of a deeper story they already believe, like the American dream, for example, or some other story that is really driving them. It's sort of the actual software that's sort of operating the decisions they're making. And so a lot of times we don't get into that story level. So talk a little bit about, what was that like for you? Was there some kind of trigger or some kind of part of that process that really got a hold of you? And then I'd love to talk about from that point how that translated into the whole family conversation.
Yeah. So it kind of sounds simple, but I think the biggest thing for us that really was, it shouldn't have been, but it was pretty radical, was in all the decisions we were making, we wanted to try to hear from God. So previously, when we were, you know, searching for a job, thinking about timing of when we were going to have our family, like, we would do whatever pleased us and whatever we wanted. And I think if I could put it in a high level, like, what we learned out of Storyform Life was that God had, you know, he had input in those decisions, and really we should be like listening to and depending on him in terms of what he was telling us to do. So we just kind of started off with any decision we were making, like, really praying about it and thinking, like, what is God telling us to do, rather than just doing whatever suited us. That really made some, you know, radical waves in our life in terms of how it played out. So I'd say that was the biggest thing. In terms of family, I think the thing that struck us the most was seeing that there was more than what I've seen modeled in American families today, and in American Christian families too. But there's this something deeper, something was just kind of a better picture of what God had originally intended the family to look like when we studied kind of through Storyform Life what family looked like in the Old Testament, and how children were an asset and not just a liability. So I think that was a big thing where, you know, I kind of viewed as children as they took away finances, they took away time, they took away the freedom of my schedule. But then actually looking at them as like they're a blessing, you know, like it says in Psalm 127, they're something that we should really celebrate. And so I think that was a big thing that I took away from Storyform Life as well. And that's played out really, really uniquely and really cool in our lives and how we're doing our businesses now and the projects that we work on. Our kids are really an asset. Like I said, my wife sells high chair accessories, something that she never would have started had it not been for kids. So having kids and going through the whole high chair process, figuring out what's the best one for the buck and figuring out the problems that we had with a certain high chair we got, my wife figured out a way to make it a little bit better. And that was really because we had kids. I mentioned I run a fitness company. My fitness company is really geared towards families, whether it's stay-at-home moms or whether it's dads who want to be more present with their kids and don't want to have a gym membership taking them away from their family. So having the experience of having kids really has been a benefit in running how I run my business, and how I know what parents want when they're looking for a workout when they're busy and have kids and whatnot. So that's one way that's kind of played out tangibly in our lives. So those are some.
That's awesome. And you kind of talked about this idea of integrating your kids, and I know that was part of the what. You know, you guys at the flyupfitness.com?
Flyupfitness.com, right.
Okay. And you started working out with your kids. I'm curious even the journey, because there's a video.
Yeah.
So you guys should check it out, that Brent working out with his kids. And you were on a show, I think.
Yeah, we were on Fox News. They flew us out to New York City. We were on Fox and Friends, and picked up by lots of other international news and media. And so the story behind that was whenever I would work out at home, because I wanted to be around my family more, and I still go to the gym occasionally, but I work out at home often just so I can be present with my family. And my kids loved to see me work out. They loved to either, you know, participate in what I was doing, mimic me and do what I was doing, or kind of climb all over me like I'm a human jungle gym while I was working out. So my wife thought it was cute and started to videotape some of these home workouts that we were doing. And I took some of the video, edited it together, threw it out on Facebook, and it got 24 million views. And we were getting, like I said, interviews with lots of different international news and media agencies. We flew out to New York City to be on Fox and Friends, and had just this really totally random experience that God, used our kids to kind of bless our business. And it was a very, very big surprise. But it was a great adventure.
Wow, that's crazy. I just, when you said that the paradigm shift that you had was that children were an asset, not a liability. And there are these unbelievably concrete examples of your children at their, what were their ages, or what are
they? They were 3 and 1 at the time. They're 4 and 2 now. Yeah.
And so most people are like, if they're, your kids are ever going to be a liability, right, it's when they're that young. Mm-hmm. Like what can they possibly do to help you in your life or help build assets for your family future? But because you guys had this paradigm and you started trying to integrate things, it was like, the world is fascinated by this, I guess. Huh?
Yeah. So, and it was actually last year, this was in 2016 that this happened. And around Father's Day, Huffington Post and Business Insider both did feature stories on the video for Father's Day, talking about different fathers in the news. And they featured our story. And at that point, as I was reading these stories about how, this was this quote unquote super dad in doing workouts with his kids, like, it was kind of this moment where I realized this didn't go viral because of the fly up, the product that I created. It went viral because people loved seeing this story of this father exercising with his kids, being present and being involved with his kids. And that's what was really the beautiful part of this video. And so out of that, it's led to other things. I'm actually now writing children's books. So again, another project that is completely motivated by the children in our lives. So we are launching our first book later this year, and we've got several other kids' books written that hopefully will make it into publication.
That's
so
awesome.
It seems like every project now that we're working on is somehow motivated by our kids.
That is amazing. Mm-hmm. I love that story. Man, that's crazy. And by the way, if you're listening to this, we'll find all these links and put them probably, I think it'll be at familyteams.com/2. This is our second podcast, so we'll put some notes out there for you guys so you can get all these links. This is pretty awesome, and definitely would love to see those articles that were written. That's really crazy. Well, and it seems like the thing that blows my mind is, to your point, if it wasn't necessarily the products, but it was the sight of a dad integrating his children into his life, the level, how novel apparently that is culturally, that they're like, oh my gosh, what is this strange creature, a father who's mm-hmm. really, that's so, but they crave it. It's not like they're rejecting it. They're like, there's something missing. Mm-hmm. And it's not just the Christian culture that notices it. It's everyone, it seems like. I mean, I don't know what kind of conversations in these interviews you've had.
Well, a lot of the feedback we've gotten is like, what's so special about this video? I've seen moms doing this all over the place on social media. And it's true. I mean, this working out with your kids, if you're a woman, is not very novel. You see a lot of moms working out with their kids, and it doesn't get like the type of feedback and viralness that my video got. And so that does just kind of show you that like it is because it's a male, it's a father who's doing this with his kids, that's what makes this unique, and that's what makes it a little bit special. Which, it like you said, the fact that it's not just Christians seeing this who think it's great, it's the whole world that thinks this is special. And it just shows that there is a need for it, and there is a need for people who model what being a present and involved father looks like.
Man. So for you, I'm curious to maybe get a little more in the weeds, because you had this paradigm shift about maybe my kids are an asset, maybe we should rethink the way we're thinking about family. How about just for you personally, your identity? I don't know what it was like growing up, or what your aspirations were, what your thoughts were about fatherhood, mm-hmm. or about having children. Yeah. Anything else that like that affected you, at least at the, like the identity level? Because yeah. Just imagine, I'm sure there's a lot of dads who are really, yeah, they're this idea of like, I really want to integrate, you know, my children into things. I you know, a lot of us maybe like, I like going to the gym by myself, yep. You know, I like living a little bit more independently from my children. But you know, your heart turned, it seems like. I'm curious how that happened or how that felt or what some of those things were that made that happen.
Yeah. So I think, that the picture that I had for a father was a provider, you know, somebody who provided for his kids, gave them, you know, the best that money could afford type of idea. And so that was definitely a paradigm shift. That's also, you know, that meshed well with my, you know, original thought after college, after marriage, like, okay, I'm just going to climb the corporate ladder, make as much money as possible and have financial and career success. When we left the whole public accounting world in 2012, turning down 3 jobs on the table that were all paying 6 figures to really risk everything and take a huge financial investment into a business that we had no idea if it was going to you know, succeed or not, that was a real challenge to my, you know, what I viewed being a father as a provider. And so that was really difficult, and it took a long time to adjust. I think that my story, I felt like, was a really good parallel for the whole Israelites being led out of Egypt in Exodus, and the whole while I felt like I was experiencing freedom but longing for slavery, like longing to go back to accounting and have that comfort and know, like, this is what I'm used to, this is what I'm comfortable, this is what I expect as a father, but yet I felt like God was calling me to something better. So yeah, the way that God's defined finances and career success, all of that has completely changed. And now I feel like what I want to be as a father is somebody who has the loudest voice in my kids' life, somebody who's there and is present and, you know, is really intentional about training them, really intentional about, you know, just the way that they are raised in every aspect of life.
Wow, that's awesome. Wow, that's super interesting. Okay, so we got some insight into your journey. I'd love to hear, so I asked Brent coming into this to kind of think about some topics that maybe are current challenges or thoughts that he has that we could maybe discuss together. So yeah, do you want to pick one of those and kind of maybe sure. Give me some background on what that topic's about?
Yeah, sure. So we're filming this, or we're recording this on July 17th. And so I have 2 kids that are born in July, and then our third is coming in next week in July as well. So all of our kids are born in July. And one of the challenges that we're having right now is, and because this is very relevant to us, is how to do family birthday celebrations. This is a real challenge because anytime we really want to do is we want to teach our kids and train our kids that they are a gift from God, they are a blessing, and that our team is stronger because they're a part of it. But when we go into the whole birthday party situation, it feels very individualistic for them. And maybe it's because they're 2 and 4 and it's like, yeah. You know, what can you expect at this age? But it's all about the presence. It's all about me. Yeah. And so that's a current challenge that we're going through. I figured I'd bring up and see what kind of thoughts you have.
We have
that.
A similar challenge in our family. So yeah. We have 5 children and 3 are birthdays in November. So, and 2 of them are 1 day apart.
Oh, really?
And they're our middle daughters. So Sydney and Elisa. And so we've always had that conversation. It's like, how much do we give in to their desire to experience something unique that's based around them? Now this is sort of, this might sound like a strange conversation for some people out there who are like, wait a minute, like, of course you celebrate the individualism mm-hmm. of your children. But what Brett and I both are struggle with is that we have a higher value, which is we want our families to think about themselves as a team. And so it's important to figure out, where's that balance? And our culture does so much work at elevating individualism that sometimes it feels like anything we do to celebrate individualism is actually continuing to allow that pendulum to be so extreme
right.
In the lives of our kids. So yeah, that's a big deal and that's a big question. I know for us, one thing, this is just kind of one rhythm. I'm curious, I would love to hear like things you guys have tried. I know one thing for us that I've really enjoyed. So our family has a formal sort of family meal every week. Do you guys do a Shabbat meal or a sort of a weekly family meal that's a little different?
Yeah, like so that? Friday nights we do a Shabbat meal, and then Saturday is our Shabbat.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do it that rhythm too. So what we've started to do is what's sacred about birthdays is the birthday Shabbat. So so that's been a rhythm where what we do on, if there's a birthday, the next Shabbat is going to be for that child, or that, and we do it for our parents and, you know, for anyone that regularly comes to our Shabbat dinner. But for the kids, it's a really big deal. And so it's one of the funnest nights. It sort of turned into this amazing tradition where I just sort of announced to the whole table at the beginning of the meal, hey, during this meal, we're celebrating Sydney today. She's turning 12, or she turned 12 a few days ago. And so this is her birthday Shabbat. And so what we want to do is just, we want to call out things about her that are really, that we appreciate. And so at any point in the meal, when you want to do that, just hit your glass and then we'll toast to whatever that thing is cool. And so, you know, we'll be eating and all of a sudden ding, 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 ding. And then, you know, her brother will stand up and say, Sydney, I love this about you. You know, you do this, and then we all toast to, you know, to whatever, to friends or to the way that Sydney loves people or whatever. And that, and it, what's really touching is the way that too, like grandparents or cousins sometimes are come over. We'll invite maybe during that Shabbat people that will, you know, I remember one time my son's birthday, we invited his best friend and their whole family over for that Shabbat. And they had a lot to say about Jackson. Mm-hmm. So it was like he was getting affirmed from about three or four angles: his siblings, his parents, his grandparents, his friends' parents, and it really created a theme about the whole experience. You know, now of course, really little kids are going, "What's going on?" You know, like, and I think that, but that's a tradition that I think we're even as soon as the kids are able to kind of have a character of their own, probably four or five. I really like that kind of affirmation. So that's one thing we've done.
Hey guys, did you know we have another podcast called 5 Minute Fatherhood? In it, Jeremy and I take 5 minutes every day to bring you a quick tip or piece of wisdom that will help equip and encourage you on your journey as a father living in God's design as the coach of your family team. Find it or listen and subscribe by searching 5 Minute Fatherhood on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, or anywhere else podcasts are at.
Did you want to say
I wanted to add something. I feel like that's a recent tradition that morphed out of us kind of growing up and being able to understand things like that more. But I remember when we were younger, for the girls' birthdays and even for Jackson, we would have like one big party, like not every year, but like every couple years. That's like, okay, you guys can eat who you all want to invite and whatever. And they each had their own banner. I remember this one specific one, like Sydney's banner and Ellie's banner. They each had their own dessert that they picked out and things like that, but they all had the same guests. They were all celebrated together, but they had different presents. And then on their individual birthdays, we do breakfast in bed, and we'll go to a place where they want to go for lunch or dinner, and we give them presents then or whatever. So like they had their individual day, but we also like celebrated all together, which for me and Kyra, who are the only ones that don't have birthdays in November, it's a bit different. But we usually don't have a party, but because there's three of them all together, we would just throw like one big party for them, which I feel like was really effective for having younger kids.
Yeah.
It's like that's what they understand more. Like you're celebrating together.
Yeah.
But we also want to celebrate like, oh, this is like we're celebrating your life and this is the day that you're born. So that's awesome. But we're also together. And I wish they were here so they could say something.
Yeah, they help.
But I feel like I really liked how that went out because they had their own, this is my color at the party, like, or whatever. But it did feel very united, I think.
So. Yeah. That's really good. We've tried doing similar things. And I think, you know, one of the things that we've found a good success in is we have family come over as well, extended family, aunts and uncles and cousins. And we have a couple of pieces of paper for each child that say, like, what's one word you'd use to describe, you know, Gio, who's our oldest, or what's one of your favorite memories of Gio from this year? And they'll take time writing it down, giving thoughtful things that we can put into a book, and hopefully, you know, he can look back on years and see how his identity and how he's grown and matured and whatnot, and how that's changed over time. And so that's one thing that's we've been real intentional about doing, but you know, it just feels like as a four-year-old, probably every four-year-old's love language is getting presents, and it seems like that's what it's about for him and this day. And so it probably is a good transition to maybe my next question, which is how to do some of these, you know, how to do some of these, whether it's biblical festivals that we're implementing or some of these family rhythms that we're doing or ways to do kingdom work with young kids. You know, it's funny, we're actually experiencing a lot better success in business, like I've mentioned before, having young kids and how that's influenced our business than some of those areas into like the family activities, whether that's biblical festivals that we're trying out or other things.
Well, I think it's a great question. I think when I think about festivals, I like people to kind of pull back. And this applies to birthdays and any kind of annual tradition, is we often, where we understand this the best is around Christmas. And I start with, when you like what you said about kids understand presents around Christmas. But I think most of us, you look back on your Christmas, even into your childhood, when you were obsessed with presents and couldn't wait for Christmas morning or something. There was something about, it felt like the whole day or the whole event was somehow like magical. And a lot of times our culture obsess over that, you know, where we think about that as the spirit of Christmas, right? We're like, oh, there's something totally unique about Christmas. It's the best time of the year, blah, blah, blah. I think it's really important to level up from that understanding and say there's something unbelievably magical and powerful about traditions, annual traditions. It's a tool in the tool belt of a father or a mother when you're building your family. And you know, your kids when they're 2 years old, they've only experienced, you know, this is their, you know, they've experienced one other Christmas or something they remember or they don't remember, right? So you have a completely blank slate, and that our culture has so many amazing traditions around Christmas. Presents, and I think about presents or candy at Halloween or crazy awesome desserts like cake at your birthday or whatever. These are sort of like little kid enhancers of the tradition. It creates something that, like you said, they can relate to, they can like get super excited about. But I think that I think of that as sort of like a way to attract them to this deeper, meaningful tradition. And so I think speaking your child's love language at whatever age they are is probably totally cool. As long as you are thinking about why are we using, like, how, what is this tool that tracks their attention, you know, like, you know, just a little bit of honey. Like I know that in the rabbis would put honey on like a Torah when a child was born. And the, you know, it was like, that's kind of the idea behind presents or candy or cake. It's like, and what's unfortunate and our culture tends to do is that enhancer or that sort of attention grabber, like the present or the cake or the candy, becomes the core. And then the traditions around it change every year so that there's no, you're not actually using the superpower of tradition to cause your child to feel like they're having a magical experience. And that's, I don't know, Kelsey, if you want to weigh in on that, because I mean, you've seen us try to like establish these things, but so much of that for us, I think, is, okay, we're going to do that stuff. We're going to dial that down a little bit, and then we're going to like wrap around it really consistent annual experiences. And I think that with Christmas, you have smells, you have colors, you have music. There's so much wrapped around it, so much that is predictably consistent. And so we just get hit by this tsunami of powerful annual traditions. But with every other tradition, virtually, you know, there are things, it's difficult to figure out what are those things that we're going to actually pour cement around.
Yeah.
And so I think with birthdays, you know, we come up with some new crazy awesome party every year, or new celebration somewhere, some outing. What I would really spend time thinking about is what is a birthday for our family? and what are some traditions we can wrap around that experience. And then the cake and all the other sort of attention grabbers, the presents, but the child is experiencing kind of this magical moment, potentially. I don't know if that helps, but that's a thought I have about that.
Yeah, I think my favorite during Christmas, like I can't remember the actual presents that I get. Like I can't look back and be like, oh yeah, that's the year I got my teddy bear. I don't know. But what I do remember is every single year when we'll all decorate the tree together and decorate the house and listen to Christmas music. Like we have the same Christmas playlist that hasn't changed very much. And then like eat cookies and drink eggnog. And that's been the same. And because you continue to do that, that becomes more powerful than like the presents. Right. And it becomes when you're older, the things that you think about. Whereas like when you're a kid, yeah. And that year you think a lot about your presents. But when you're older, like you're just crafting something for your kid to remember later on. And I think I really appreciate that. So.
What have you guys kind of experienced? Have you done any of those things as well?
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned Shabbat earlier, and like the biblical festivals that we've tried besides Shabbat have been, you know, Sukkot, and we've done Feast of Trumpets and Passover. And as we do these things that are a little bit different than Christmas, because the rest of our culture isn't behind them as much, and you don't see holiday specials on them on TV and Christmas music on the radio, that has been a little bit, that's the part that's felt more of a challenge, because we feel like we're trying to hype something that our kids don't have as much knowledge about, just because it's not going on in our culture. But I think again, this goes to, we're early in this, you know, in the whole family scenario thing, where we've got a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. And I think that's something that will develop over time, because traditions take time to develop.
Right, that's right.
And we can definitely see that with Shabbat, which is a weekly rhythm, where we can see, you know, we've been doing this for a couple years now, and that took a long time to develop. But now it's really beautiful and comfortable, and we know the tradition, and and that it slightly changes as our kids mature and what we want to teach them and train them. But I think what you said that was really helpful for me is our mode has for these, you know, for the festivals that we're trying to celebrate and what we're trying to train our kids, our mode has been to get them excited about it first and then kind of teach them the message second, just because of the age that they're at.
Right.
And so I think right now we're just wanting them to hopefully next year remember what Feast of Trumpets was and that it was a fun day and that they're excited about it. And then as they get older, they'll start to understand what we're trying to train them through that.
Yeah.
So that's what we're...
That's really good. Yeah, those younger stages, it is so much about like building for the future. And it's good that we have time to do that, as our kids are, you know, barely remembering what happened last year, but then all of a sudden something starts to feel similar and something starts to feel deep. And then all of a sudden something starts to feel ancient or magical.
Yeah, right.
We all remember having that experience with a holiday that maybe our parents did, consistently. And if you've had that experience, it is powerful and it roots identity, you know? And so I just encourage people to take every single one of those things that really you felt was magical. If it was Christmas for you or whatever, like for me, like I have a Sukkot playlist, you know, it's all this bluegrass music about going home, you know? So that's just the music of Sukkot for me. And I built that playlist out the same way I did my Christmas playlist. Or, you know, there are movies like Ushpizin. It's an amazing Sukkot movie that we watch every year the same way we might watch It's a Wonderful Life, you know, or whatever. So I love the fact that, like, that's why a lot of people that celebrate Christmas, sometimes when they get into the biblical holidays, they sometimes think, well, I want to do these instead of Christmas. But I want people to really be thoughtful about, hey, take all the goodness you learned. Like, think about Christmas as being a training in how to do an amazing holiday.
Yeah.
And our culture, it's commercialized, and there's lots of weird things about it that are hard for, I think, believers sometimes. But there's also just a lot of great practices that can be gleaned from the way that we've learned how to do at least one holiday in that super immersive sense. And I think that's what's fun. And I think I've similarly tried to figure out, does birthdays have can you do something similar? Are there things that could become like traditions like you guys are doing with like writing on the, you know, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And the more you can solidify those, I think the better those become, and the more that they're something your kids really, really dig into. I also said, are there some successes or something? You mentioned something about family Bible studies. I'm curious what that
is. So we have started probably in the last couple of years. I think we've been doing it about 2 years now, just a family Bible study where on Tuesday nights we start with family worship, where we put YouTube videos up that have lyrics on them, and they a lot of times are really kid-friendly songs. We just, again, try to make it something that the kids are excited about. It's a weekly rhythm, and we want them to look forward to it. And so on Tuesday nights we start out with some worship songs and dance around our family room while we, you know, listen to some kids' songs and some adult songs as well that they get excited about and listen to. And then we lead into family Bible study, where we actually pull the Bible out and read through scripture. And with the kids, you know, just turning 4 and 2, that's probably the smallest chunk of the time. We probably go through maybe 5 verses at a time. We've gone through Proverbs and a little bit of Romans and just kind of talk through what these verses mean and what's going on. And it's really just to get them exposure to reading the Bible at this point. And then we end with prayer, and that's like creating a prayer journal so that they can see what we've been praying for. We look back on things that on the answered prayers and things that we still need to
is
pray
that,
for.
Is that a family prayer journal, or does each kid have one?
No, it's a family prayer journal. Oh, yeah. So cool. Yeah. So we'll ask them, what do you think we should pray for this time? And you know, sometimes it's really thoughtful things, and sometimes it's that Chick-fil-A will be done soon, so we can go get Chick-fil-A.
Absolutely.
But we try to just excite them about prayer, you know? Yeah. And so whatever it is, we'll put it down and we'll look back on it over time and see how God's answered the prayer. And so really, most of the time is spent between the worship and the talking through the prayer requests, but that will probably change as they mature. But again, that being a weekly rhythm, it gives us more time to see success, you know, because like the more often that happens, the more we can refine and improve and sharpen. And so, you know, we've done probably 100 of those versus doing 2 of those annual rhythms. And so, so we've found a lot of success. We mentioned it's Tuesday night family Bible study night, and they get really excited. And, we have a good time.
That's awesome. And you guys, what was it that went into even decisions like Tuesday night? Or I'm curious if there was,
So it started out on Thursday night and just randomly. But Thursday night was difficult because if we missed it, then we missed it for the week because Friday's our Shabbat night. And it sometimes there's still weeks where we miss it and that happens. But if we miss it on Tuesday, we can push it to Wednesday or Thursday. So doing it earlier in the week helps us, not miss it. That was kind of the big decision as far as timing. One thing that we had learned over time, you know, we kept missing it every time that it was on a Thursday and we had another engagement. So we moved it earlier in the week. I think one thing that God's really been teaching our family over the last few years is to be intentional about the way that we do our family structure, but really to depend on Him and not depend on what we see other families doing. Mm. And I've had lots of conversations with people about this because at first I would see people that I really respect doing things a certain way, and I felt like I'd have to be a carbon copy of what they were doing and kind of follow follow their traditions the same way they did them. And I felt like God was kind of leading us into depending on Him more. So covering things in prayer and saying, God, how do you want us to do this? So that's really played into how we do our family Bible studies, is saying, our kids are 4 and 2. What do we want to, what's the purpose that we want to have for this family Bible study night, and how can we best do that? So just kind of figuring out the dynamics of our family and the ages that they're at has been what's led us and how God has spoken to us through that. Like another recent example, I think I mentioned Feast of Trumpets earlier. Feast of Trumpets. And Feast of Trumpets is a funny one too, because in the Bible when they talk about it, it says it's a day to blow trumpets in remembrance. And it doesn't really say in remembrance of what. And so it kind of is a festival that you can kind of make your own. I mean, there's Jewish traditions to it, but we were like, God, we just want you to speak to us. And how do you want us to celebrate this? And came up with some fun, creative ideas and a great way of telling the story of creation and sin entering the world. And we had these black balloons that followed us around all day as these black balloons that represented sin. And then in the end, we wrote down our sins and we tied them to the black balloons and we let them up into the air.
Oh, representing that's awesome.
Sin. So, yeah, you know, it was something cool that we just felt like as we kind of prayed about these things and what message that we wanted to send to our kids. I feel like we've been able to depend more on God and what He wants our family to do.
Hey guys, did you know that me and Jeremy created a special fatherhood masterclass we do online called The Skill of Fatherhood? If you want to immediately level up your father skills and learn an entire system with tips and tricks and philosophy and help that we believe can fundamentally change your family's life forever, then this masterclass is for you. There's an entire module on the skill of training your kids with about 8 teaching videos in that one. There's an entire module you get on the skill of coaching your family as a team on mission with 8 or more videos in that one, including multiple interviews with a bunch of families doing this and how they do that. And an entire module on the skill of building multi-generational legacy and vision for your family with about 7 or 8 videos on that. The masterclass also comes with a workbook that walks you through the process so you never feel overwhelmed but feel equipped and encouraged and ready to start leading your family in a bigger and better direction starting today. And we want to hook you guys up. So our podcast listeners, if that's you and you're listening, we want to give you an exclusive deal that we aren't doing anywhere else online. So if you want to get $20 off the masterclass right now today, then head to familyteams.com and use the code DADS. That's DADS at familyteams.com. Again, that's the code DADS to get $20 off at familyteams.com.
I'd love for you to go just one layer down into the weeds. When you say, so when you made the decision, okay, we're going to really come up with traditions that we really feel like the Lord's leading us into as a family. Mm-hmm. You pray about it. How do those hit you? Like, did you take some time and just start thinking? Did you journal about it? Did you talk to your wife? Did she come up with some ideas? Like, talk to me about a little bit about the process of just praying into that and discovering kind of, because a lot, I know that there's some people that just feel like creative block when it comes to this stuff. And I'm curious how you guys overcame that.
So on the Tuesday night Bible study nights, after our kids go to bed, my wife and I continue and we'll do a Bible study of our own with just the two of us and kind of talk through, our family, just kind of what we're seeing for the week. And then we'll kind of read through some scripture. And when we're coming through times like where Feast of Trumpets is coming up, we'll say, okay, let's take a couple of weeks and really think through how we want to celebrate this. And so, so it's usually the same Tuesday nights after the kids have gone to bed, and we'll talk about it with something like Feast of Trumpets. We would find all the scripture in the Bible that discussed it, and like I said, that's one where there's very little scripture that kind of gives detail behind it, but we read through it and read through a book that talks about how, you know, the Christian... we have a book. It's actually a book you recommended. I can't remember the title of it, but it's the
Biblical Holidays one.
Biblical Holidays one, yeah. So they kind of talk through how it's traditionally celebrated from a Jewish perspective, and we do start there, even though it really looks very different, and we call it our Gentile style, which is so different from what they're doing. So we'll start there and see what, you know, get some good ideas from that, and then we'll just say, look, God, we want you to lead us, and we want you to be our guide in how we celebrate this, and... then a lot of times it's trying to get creative, like, you know, how can we like for Passover, how can we eat lamb that our kids will enjoy? So we got gyros because they really like gyros and it's got lamb meat in it. And it's like, so it's just trying to get creative, like along with God and reading through scripture. And
that makes sense. Yeah. A couple of things that I think that stood out to me there. One is that you have a disciplined rhythmic time to talk to your wife about it, that you guys try to catch this stuff a couple of weeks in advance. And then I think that for a lot of people is where the creativity block comes from, that there's nowhere for them to think about it. There's nowhere for them to discuss it and brainstorm. And then it kind of hits them the week of, you know, or the day of, and they're like, oh, we should do something like, so it, but if you really give yourself some time praying about it, thinking about it, you can do some research, have some conversations, and then just, you know, start to develop something that just feels authentically yours. That's really a great process.
Yeah. And again, the first year going through this, it was mostly what have other people done? What does the book say we should do? And then kind of just doing that. And we didn't experience nearly as much like benefit and fruit from it. And so, I think we definitely have realized it takes forethought. It takes like weeks in advance trying to say, okay, this is coming up. It's like, it's just like Christmas. You know, when Christmas is coming up, you plan ahead for it. And you know, when Thanksgiving is coming up, you plan ahead for it and you know where you're going to be and all. And so we've had to kind of look at it the same way and plan weeks ahead of time for it.
Very cool. Awesome. Yeah. Any other challenges you think would be good to discuss?
Sure. Yeah, let's do another one. So I think one of the challenges we've had as we've become more countercultural in terms of the whole American family, Christian American family, and we've made some radical choices in terms of the schooling of our kids and what our work life looks like, which is very much, you know, it's very integrated with our family. And like a lot of decisions that we've made, that's been difficult as we're around some of our family who we're really close to. We love, you know, I've got two sisters, my wife's got three sisters, and they're married and have their own families, and we're very close to them, and our kids see their cousins all the time, and we get together a lot. And I think one thing that we've always tried to be really sensitive of is not trying to be too radical around them, and not trying to be like, we just know this is something that God's called our family to, and we don't feel any like judgment or feel like this is something that everybody needs to do. I know for sure not everybody should, you know, quit their job and work out of their basement like my wife and I do. But this is something that God's called us to. And so we've had a difficult time of trying to say the way that we've been convicted without feeling like we're pushing it on them. So I don't know if you can speak to that at all, if you've had any success with how to do that gracefully, in terms of like living differently, but being like, hey, this is just what God's called us to. And
It's, I think it does start with knowing and being sensitive to how hard that is on the extended family. I mean, it's, we have to stay very empathetic with how, you know, our parents probably had a vision. You know, even though it may not have been super proactive, and our culture has a vision for what family is, and that vision, you know, has a lot of positive elements, and it's very powerful. And like any vision or idea, it's sort of resistant to new ideas, and it's asking a lot to say, hey, why don't we have this conversation about fundamentally changing a core idea that is really in the you're sort of in a deep place in you that's helping you make incredibly hard decisions in your life, like how many kids to have and where to school your kids. And all those decisions for most people in our culture are made for us. And if you start knocking out the slats from the worldview that they have, they actually fall into the ocean, you know? So it's a very challenging thing. And I think that for my experience has been very similar to yours, and that there's sort of an initial resistance, and that the only and so what I try to think about in terms of that is to dial it way down for sure. I mean, I think it's wise to be really careful not to come out swinging, and then to present on ramps that are very much activated by the family member. They're not, you know, so. You know, for us, those on-ramps have been, hey, would you like to take a story from life? You know, I was just talking to a friend whose family, he did like a remote SFL because his parents and family were all over the place. And so they all like kind of called in and did like a one over like a Google Hangout or something like that. So that's an on-ramp we've used just about everybody. I think everybody in our whole family has been through SFL.
Okay.
And then during that process, what's really great about a process like that is there's a neutralization of the content, and that, you know, it's one thing to be confronting your friend or your family member with, you know, something really intense like the kingdom of God, you know, or the lordship of Jesus. It's another thing for them to be volunteering to go through a process where that's brought up. And everyone in the room is dealing and struggling with it equally. And so I wanted to make sure that was the environment that my family encountered some of these ideas, in a neutral environment where they volunteer to be a part of it, where they're in a room with lots of people who are going through a similar thing, who are encountering that. And then just sort of sit back and see what God does, you know, like, so, you know, our progression, it starts with a story from life. And then we, like I said, all of our family has been through that. Then if they want to have a deeper family conversation, and Story from Life, as you know, isn't really about the family.
Right.
It's just that theme tends to come up sometimes, but it's really about just the story of the gospel. But you can tell, what's amazing about it is you can really tell how people react to various chapters of the story, and that kind of gives you some clue as to where their heart's at and if that's something they're interested in or not. So that tends to be, that for us, that was our first kind of on-ramp. It's just, hey, would you like to go through an SFL, or here's one, or talk about sort of, if I'm going to emphasize something, it's going to be something that's very close to their next step, as opposed to my step. Like, I wouldn't say, hey, are you guys enjoying any of the Turaic,
Yeah.
Like, that's incredibly, like, weird to people that aren't used to it. So then the next step would be like, that's why we want to do these like biannual family teams retreats or family teams conferences, so that there's a place similarly where there could be a neutral environment, sort of that we're all kind of coming to this assuming that we believe or don't know anything about this idea of family.
Yeah.
Family as multi-generational team on mission. And then people get a chance to hear about it. Mm-hmm. We had an amazing experience at this last family teams retreat where there was a sibling of one of our friends who at the last minute decided to come with his wife. And it was just, watching for my friend to watch this person go through this experience, watch his brother, his older brother in this case. It was like, it's so exciting when they catch that vision.
Yeah.
And we have to be really careful, be super gentle, especially when family members show up at those things.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh my gosh, it's you're stewarding something that could really be challenging for the relationship in the future. But for the most part, if you're doing it in that fashion, it tends to go fairly well. But that's what I look for. And beyond that, I try to really keep it as light. And unless they're asking questions that are really direct, those questions seem to be like coming from a heart to learn, like an openness, and not an attackingness, kind of questions, then I tend to really want to like see if there's that on-ramp.
Right.
What are those on-ramps? That's what I'm looking for. But yeah.
Yeah. That's good. I think that's really helpful. And I think, we've just tried to just casually invite them into our family activities too, whether that's a family Bible study or whether that's a Shabbat meal, including them in that, and not in a way to push it on them, but just in a way, hey, we love you guys and we know you love the Lord and we want you to be around us as we celebrate. And that's been helpful.
It's really fascinating when people adopt a lot of these ideas. We just had a conversation at a Bible study we did last week where my parents came. And they started expressing how weird, like they come to Shabbat, with us almost every week, for years. They've been a part of Sukkot. They're totally immersed in these ideas. But I'd never heard them articulate quite as much about how hard that initial step was for them.
Yeah.
But we were at this Bible study and these various couples were expressing how their parents, this would maybe a real challenging thing for them. And my parents were like, oh my gosh, yeah. My mom like really explained very well, like how, how threatening these ideas were, like how difficult it was. And so that just the more I hear that coming from somebody who has sort of made the kind of journey into these ideas and then reflect back, the more empathy I get for, oh my gosh, how challenging this is for those people who are having this experience. So
yeah,
that's really cool.
Yeah. We've seen the best response, I feel like from our parents, from the generation up, who have said, you guys have thought through things a lot more than we've ever thought through things. You guys have been a lot more intentional, and like have really gotten on board and been excited for us. And, in some ways, it's in some ways kind of humbled themselves and said like, we're so excited that you guys are doing things in ways that we didn't realize could be done better. And I think with siblings, when they've already got kids that are, doing life, it's harder to then steer the ship a different direction.
Yeah.
And again, we're not saying that they should or that they should do what we're doing. We're just trying to do it as graciously and as lovingly as possible alongside of them.
I mean, even among our friends or like a community of people, you throw out like a topic like homeschooling versus public school, and half our friends that are very deeply involved in multi-generational family on mission are really involved, you know, almost exclusively in public school. And then we have lots and lots of friends who are, you know, multi-generational team on mission and doing lots of homeschool stuff. And it's a hard conversation for those two groups to have together.
Yeah.
So you can imagine how challenging. So I think it is, it just, there's a lot of grace needed.
Yeah.
Because a lot of us are intimidated. And I think that it is just because we all, these decisions are so challenging to make. So a lot of empathy, I think, for those people. And I know you guys have that, and that's I think, really helpful. So I'm going to read a little sort of insider thought.
Okay.
This is just for dads in general. I want to get maybe both of you to your take, and that'll be the last thing we'll do.
All right.
So this is this thing is called My First Workday with My Daughter. 15 years ago, I sat in a board of directors meeting with a man investing in our first company, and in the room as well sat his three sons. Sometime in the middle of that three-hour meeting, I suddenly realized that this man gets to spend more time with his sons, now in their 30s, than most fathers spend with their kids when they are young and living in the house. I had never even considered this before. I had only seen children grow up and get a job and move away from their parents with the hope that they could be reunited for Christmas, Thanksgiving. And even while the kids are in the house, most dads spend the majority of their time at work, away from their families. And so there's a depth of relationship that they may never achieve with their children unless they find some way to integrate their kids into their work life. So I made a specific decision at that moment. My oldest daughter was 3 at the time, and I decided to steer my work life in such a way that if any of my kids wanted to work with me when they entered the workforce, that they at least would have the option open to them. It's not a demand or even an expectation, but I want it to be an option. Our culture is obsessed with the horror story of parents being too narrow in their vision for their children. Movies from The Little Mermaid to Horton Hears a Who tell us that our kids have nothing, there's nothing more dangerous than having a vision for your children. This stems from a sacred doctrine of modern Western culture that the individual is not finding their destiny unless it's unencumbered by any direction from the past generation. While there are certainly ways to smother your kids through your manipulating them to follow your self-centered visions, it's important to remember that there's also a danger on the other side as well. Asking your kids to, quote, find themselves and ensuring that finding a major part of their identity within the soil of their multi-generational family is not even an option. Could be a problem. Why not make it an option? Why not pursue big things as a family and invite your kids to consider serving those initiatives, whether they be businesses or ministries or projects or causes, where their unique talents, gifts, and callings can be fully released and efforts organized and led by and through your family. And so last week I sat in my office in a familiar weekday morning meeting with one big difference. My daughter was in the room, fully engaged in her new job working for our organization. The meeting content was nothing special. Normal, mundane projects to be organized and managed, but everything about that meeting was filled with a special meaning for me because I was getting to do these things in partnership with my daughter. I'm sure this experience will come and go. I'm sure she'll spend many years serving with her husband and kids, need to travel to places far from our land and home, but having open doors into my work, if and when it makes sense for her and my other children, is a worthwhile effort because doing my normal work in those moments means more than just getting work done. It means directly investing in the relationships that will build our multi-generational family. So that was a cool experience I got to have with Kelsey, and then she's right here producing our podcast.
Very cool.
Which is really amazing. But I was just struck too, listening to your story, Brent. You have, like, already your kids were 1 and 3 and you're integrating them into the work, and you guys have made this decision. I just don't think there are many dads, when thinking about their career, that even think this is an option, you know, that to work with their children when they're in working age, let alone when they're, you know, toddlers, like you guys have tried to figure out ways to do. So yeah, I don't know if you have any thoughts or last comments about that.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. That's a beautiful story, and I think that it's, to be honest, to some, it's unique to some careers. And I try to think of my job as a CPA. And I think it's possible to have a family, you know, a united family team where you're present, but it's a lot more challenging, you know? And so I think there is, whether you're finding a career that has some sort of flexibility or whether you're just doing a lot of kind of side projects and involving your kids in them, I think that that's important to do. But I think that that's a great story, and I think that that's something that we have been trying to do with our kids. I've got lots of local suppliers in town for both of our businesses that we, you know, are constantly making errands, picking up inventory, dropping off, you know, goods that need to be finished. And whenever I do that, I try to bring my kids because it's a great way to build a relationship with the client. The client, the supplier really loves that. They love to see our kids involved, and they love, like, we get special treatment because we've got kids there, you know? And so the kids can really be an asset, and kids can really benefit. The father and child relationship really benefits from that. But it is definitely something you have to work for. I mean, it's something that won't come naturally, and you won't see displayed in culture unless, like you're saying, it's something where it's like the children are grown and then you're entering into business with them. But.
Yeah, I think it's a variable, to your point. Like, there's some careers that are extremely difficult and there's some careers that are much easier, and it's a spectrum, right? It's not usually 100% yes, 100%, you know, completely unavailable. But I think that's just a variable most people don't think about when they're choosing their career. They're not like, am I ever going to get to work with my kids someday? And I don't think it should be the only variable, maybe even it shouldn't be the determining variable, but it should be a variable that you consider. And for me, it tipped the scale in a direction that I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to kind of lean this direction. And, you know, this is now 15 years later, I've leaned that direction for 15 years. And this is sort of like an opportunity that kind of came out of that.
What do you think of people who have jobs currently that don't have that variable, that don't have the ability to bring kids to work or to, what do you think of that?
I just think it's something they need to consider, sort of like if there's any element of that they would choose differently if they thought the option was available. Mm-hmm. You know, and to your point about side projects, and there are lots of ways to live integrated with your children and dial down. If I knew that I was in a job that my children had zero access to 100% of the time when I was at work, I would be very disciplined about the hours I spend at work. Mm-hmm. And because it's a very disintegrated workplace.
Yeah.
And so knowing that, I'm going to be like really careful about 50, 60 hour work weeks in a place like that. Now, where I work, where we really, one of our core values at Epifio is choose integration. So I'm not the only one who brings my kids to work, and lots of dads and moms here can do that and have taken advantage of that in different ways. And it allows us to be, because we're more integrated, and you know, you don't have to be quite as crazily disciplined about, okay, if I'm, you know, I get to take some time to take my kid to this and they can come in and work with me for a couple hours. And we're just telling people, do integration experiments here at work, you know, figure out ways to bring things together, make things mesh. But yeah, I would definitely be hesitant to say to that mom or dad who cannot take their child to work or can't integrate anything, hey, you've made a bad choice. Mm-hmm. I do think that when most of us made that choice, we didn't think about this variable.
Right.
And I didn't think about it until I was sitting in that boardroom and I was like, oh my gosh, this is a decision I'm making. Right. I didn't realize I ever made this decision. Like, I may be going down a career path that's inaccessible to my kids. And here this guy is, because he's a business owner in this case, where he was really able to experience deep integration into his 60s, you know, 70s. Yeah. And so that was just inspiring to me. And really, like, I was like, thank God I saw that.
Right.
And so that's just what I want to sort of broadcast out to people, is like, hey, that's a variable. Consider that. Most of us don't. That's not on the checklist when we're choosing careers. Maybe it should be.
Yeah.
Should be something we should think about. So.
Yeah.
So any last comments, Kels, or any thoughts?
Yeah, well, it's really funny that you read that, because this whole time I've been thinking, at the end, I'm going to talk about going to work with Dad. I don't know why, but I thought of that earlier. So I just wanted to say that as a kid who grew up like that, from going to the warehouse where I would put labels on merchandise for our online store, to going to work with you when you worked on the computer from a library or Starbucks, to being in my first meeting with you, like in a paid internship, it's been like a key element in my memories and my growing up and the way I make decisions and the things that I consider and think about. And so I just wanted to say that it's like extremely effective Knowing that I can come to Epifio whenever I want, or knowing that I can just like, even dad will be like, yeah, you can come be with me. I'll be in meetings all day. And I'll be like, okay, that's fine. And I'll just bring something quiet to do in the corner. Or, oh, hey, I don't have any meetings today. I think I'm just going to go to like the library or Starbucks. You want to come with me? Like whatever. It's been really great to know that, or I can ask him if he can come home early to help me with something, or if I can ask mom to drive me halfway to meet him somewhere. And it's just knowing that flexibility and that intentionality through that has been really awesome. So
you made the comment that you feel like it's effective. Like, I'm curious, what effective for what? Like, what
effective for, like, relationship building and like just forming whatever framework you want your child to think out of. I don't know, just like, if you're trying to build a multi-generational team on mission, the only way to do that is to go on relationship building missions with your kids.
Right.
And so that can be anywhere from like a trip to a different country or a different state, or let's go to work together today. And that's just, it's effective in making that feel like a team, feel like we're here, we're doing something, we're on a mission, and it's multi-generational. That's a parent with their kid. And so I just think that that's a super key element with that.
Awesome. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. Well, this has been a fun conversation.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot for hanging out.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, this has been fun.
All right, guys, that's all we have for today's episode. Remember, you have what it takes as a father equipped by the Holy Spirit to lead your family as a multi-generational team on mission. And as always, remember to let us know what you thought about today's episode at Family Teams on Instagram, at Family Teams on Facebook. Search for us there, easy to find, and you will find us. And let us know what you thought, whether something that stood out, something that was encouraging, or some feedback you would like to give us. All right, have a great rest of the day.